Hello, you. You're listening to A History of Italy, a Sentire Media podcast. Episode 166, The Italian Wars 3, finally Naples, for a bit. E così ritorno su, lascio i colli nelle valli, tra due salici piangenti, io ritrovo la speranza di un amore che ormai fu. In this episode, we finally get back to French King Charles VIII, who has been waiting for us with growing impatience to get down to Naples to finally lay his claim on the kingdom. Now, it may so happen that you, my dear listener, have an ancestral claim to the Kingdom of Naples and may want to come and make good on it. Well, you'll want to make sure you know as much as possible about the local terrain and culture before you go off raising an army. The best way to do this is to take a trip with our partner for this episode, Explore Worldwide. It's all about local knowledge, and that is what sets Explore apart. Their respect for the local culture and environment extends to finding local tour leaders that can get you off the beaten track and into the heart of your adventure, and their small groups allow for a more personalized experience you will never forget. Whether it's visiting a Roman villa on the classical tour of Sicily or a food and wine tour in the hilltop towns of Tuscany, Explore take care of everything, putting the quality of their local tour leaders front and center, so you'll truly understand the wow factor of where you are. For example, a good starting point to prepare for your conquest could be the highlights of Naples and the Amalfi Coast tour. Also, remember the kingdom is not just Naples and surrounding areas, so you'll want to go on a Puglia cycle tour. Of course, while you're at it, you might want to go all the way and settle the age-old struggle between Angevins and Aragonese and add Sicily to your realm. So you'll want to take a Sicily tour, such as the Classic Sicily, which takes you to the Valley of the Temples in Agrigento and to Erice. Even if you then decide that ruling over the Kingdom of Naples is too much hassle, don't just travel, explore. Go to exploreworldwide.com for more information. That's exploreworldwide.com. Or click the link in the show notes of this episode so they'll know that we sent you. Thank you very much. It took my daughter a while to learn to ride a bike. Not because she actually had trouble with it, but because with her iron will, she had decided she didn't want to. I would sit her on the bike and she would simply refuse to pedal. This was not uncommon for my daughter, and getting her to the stage of an intelligent, witty young woman I am deeply proud of has so far been a journey with quite a few long, drawn-out battles. In the end, she did decide she wanted to learn to ride a bike, and she did so very quickly. One particularly long ride we enjoyed took us through a wood, through vineyards, over a red bridge that stuck out like a sore thumb, along a river, and finally into a large park that was part of the grounds of a 15th century ancestral home where an Italian writer, Ludovico Ariosto, was born. I won't be hurt if you don't know his name. He's not up there with Dante, Machiavelli or Manzoni, but he is our local Reggio Emilia boy, and he did write a work that we study in school, the epic poem L'Orlando Furioso. At a certain point, he writes in Canto 33. Ecco, dicea, si pente Ludovico, d'aver fatto in Italia venir Carlo. E se li scuopre, al ritorno nemico, con Viniziani in lega, e vuol pigliarlo. Ecco la lancia il re animoso abbassa, apre la strada, e, lor malgrado, passa. So Ludovico regrets having had Charles enter into Italy. And upon his return, he discovers him as an enemy. In league with the Venetians, he wishes to catch him. And so the king lowers his lance, and opening up the road before him, unfortunately for them, passes through. The words of Ludovico Ariosto are taking us back to the descent of King Charles VIII of France, who we last left as he was departing from Rome. By the time he left Rome in January of 1495, the bulk of his army had gone ahead, brutally sacking the fortresses and villages of any barons who were considered hostile. Meanwhile, down in Naples, Alfonso, the new king, after the death of Ferrante in 1494, realized, to quote Taylor Swift, "It's me, hi, I'm the problem, it's me." So the king, who had not even been king for a year yet, abdicated 2 days short of celebrating his first anniversary. He had heard the news of Charles's almost unopposed descent, which had surprised and alarmed many players on the Italian scene. It turned out no one, including any possible allies of Naples, was really willing to stick out their neck for them when it came down to the line. Alfonso had, of course, heard from his son, Ferdinando, Duke of Calabria, that he had retreated from his defensive positions, as well as the news of revolt starting in the Abruzzo area, in the northeast of the kingdom. So Alfonso packed up his stuff, including most of the royal treasure, and sailed for the protection of Spanish-ruled Sicily. The new king, his son, now Ferdinand II of Naples, or Ferrandino, soon found out that his dad was not the sole problem, and it became clear that not even the Neapolitans were that willing to put their bottoms on the line when it came to defending the monarchy. Indeed, he was in Capua when he heard of an initial rebellion in the city of Naples, the brunt of which was borne by the Jewish population. Having put that down, as he approached Capua again, he was told that the commander he had left there, Gian Giacomo Trivulzio, had gone over to the French side and Capua was getting ready to open its gates to Charles. Ferrandino rushed back to Naples, but meanwhile the French army, moving in from different sides, had outmaneuvered him, and more towns of the Kingdom of Naples were opening their gates to the French. He had just enough time to order the fleet in the harbour to be burned so it would not fall into French hands, and then to sail away to the islands off the coast, from where he would later head to Sicily. On the 22nd of February, 1495, Charles VIII entered Naples, surprised at how warmly he was welcomed by the population, for now. Interestingly, although he had entered other cities in full armour as a conquering hero, when it came time for him to enter the city he actually had set out to conquer, he was more low-key, dressed in hunting clothes rather than armour, and riding a mule rather than a battle horse. All in all, it had been pretty easy getting in. The question was, would it have been just as easy if he wanted to get out? That brings us back to the opening of our episode and the words of the poet Ludovico Ariosto. Various people, both in and out of Italy, had been rather alarmed by the way things had unfolded. Ferdinand II, King of Aragon, did not like the French messing around in southern Italy, which had been a Spanish prerogative. Indeed, the Neapolitan kings were relatives. The new would-be Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian did not like the idea of the French getting their sticky paws on northern Italy, which had been historically the prerogative of the Holy Roman Empire. The Pope had never really been thrilled with the idea to begin with, and Venice, who had until now remained cautiously neutral, did not like the idea of the balance being upset, unless of course it was upset in their favour. They started to try and convince Ludovico il Moro, now Duke of Milan in full, to join a new alliance. Ludovico did not really need much convincing, because there had been one aspect of the French invasion, which he had encouraged in general, that really worried him. The presence of the Duke of Orléans, Louis, on Ludovico's doorstep as a move of Charles's troop deployment. Why did this worry him so much? Well, that is because the Duke of Orléans had had a grandmother. Now, I can hear you say that everyone that exists now and has existed and will exist had a grandmother. But it just so happens that this particular granny was one Valentina Visconti, the Visconti family, of course, being the rulers of Milan before their dynasty died out. When Valentina married into the French royal family, the deal was that, if the legitimate Visconti male heir succession died out, the claim to the Duchy of Milan would pass to her descendants, Valentina's. As we know, the Visconti line had indeed died out, but Francesco Sforza had taken over as Duke and the French could do nothing about it at the time. Now, perhaps, they could. So, Ludovico il Moro and all those other people we mentioned were worried enough to actually band together and form what was known as the Holy League. Or, since there had been and would be so many other Holy Leagues, the League of Venice on the 31st of March, 1495, which included Milan, Venice, the Spanish, the Holy Roman Emperor, and the Pope, just to make it a little bit more holy. The alliance was not actually openly anti-French and anti-Charles. They didn't go around wearing badges with Charles stinks or sing mean songs about the French, but the alliance did imply that if any Italian, quote, entity was attacked by a foreign, quote, power, the others in the pact would intervene to help out. Despite the lack of open anti-French wording, it was enough to get Charles and Naples worried. Add to this the fact that the Neapolitans, after an initial moment of enthusiasm, were starting to grumble, and it made for quite a headache. He had tried to limit the big changes in management, with the government being a mix of French and Neapolitans, and even adding a representative of the lower classes, which is something that stuck afterwards as well. But the heads of the outlying fortresses were mostly French, and they were seen by their new subjects as arrogant, and only interested in cashing in as much as they could, and not in the well-being of the local territory. Despite mounting pressure, Charles stuck around a little more, working mornings and leaving the afternoon for party time. And in Naples, then, as now, they know how to party. However, it was time to go. Also because there was movement starting in the south. Ferrandino, the king of Naples, who had taken over after the abdication of Alfonso, had crossed the Strait of Messina again, which divides Sicily from the Italian mainland, and was making his way north through Calabria. Some days later, Spanish commander Gonzalo Fernandez de Córdoba arrived in Messina and also crossed. He had, of course, been sent by Spanish King Ferdinand of Aragon. Charles finally decided to leave Naples, leaving a viceroy in command, Gilbert du Bourbon, Comte de Montpensier, and the king departed on the 20th of May, 1495. As he made his way north, the Venetians put in their own 2 cents to start to harry the French holdings along the coast of Puglia, on the Adriatic side, the right side of Italy, the heel of the boot, if you will. As he approached Rome, Charles tried to get a hold of Pope Alexander again to legitimize his position and be officially crowned king. But the Pope made sure he was far away from the city, and the king had to press on. Things were starting to get going also in the north. Duke of Milan, Ludovico Sforza, felt it was high time to make his move against Louis, Duke of Orléans, who was in Asti. Louis moved even faster. He got wind of this and moved out from Asti to take control of the town of Novara on the 11th of June. It is in this moment that the hold of Ludovico il Moro on his duchy was in real danger. He holed up with his family in the castle of Milan and even contemplated escaping to Spain. The financial situation was quite dire and there was little money to pay an army. The population was stressed by high taxation, and there were even nobles who had shown a willingness to allow Louis into Milan. Ludovico fell ill at this point, possibly from a stroke, since his right hand became paralyzed, although there is only one source that goes into this much detail. It was possible that, had the Duke of Orléans advanced any further, the Duchy of Milan could have fallen then and there. It was only the firm determination of the Duchess, Beatrice d'Este, of the Este family of Ferrara, that brought the situation around, and this also allows us to look into a little Game of Thrones-style family drama. You see, she was fully in support of hubby and his duchy, although she wasn't too pleased that Ludovico had continued his relationship with his favourite lover, Cecilia Gallerani, the girl with the ermine of Da Vinci fame, for a time after their wedding. Anyway, she now started to insist with her dad, Ercole d'Este, Duke of Ferrara, Modena, and Reggio Emilia, for him to help Ludovico in his efforts to keep things together. Daddy refused, and when his little girl insisted, he sent a bit of cash, but still refused to send troops for help. At the same time, Daddy Ercole was playing double agent and helping out the French in the hopes of getting back lands from the Venetians he had lost in the 1482 Salt War. He was secretly supplying the Duke of Orleans in Novara and keeping the French King Charles up to date on the goings-on. Not having managed to get the help of her father, Beatrice left her ailing husband behind and made her way to the encampment where the Milanese troops, now bolstered with some reinforcements from Venice, were dithering in the face of continuing raids by the Duke of Orleans. She inspected the troops and roused the captains to take the offensive, and the next day they did. They took back the lands that had been lost and laid siege to the French in Novara. This bravery and determination by Beatrice did not do much good for her husband's reputation, who was seen as a weak coward. Eventually, he too joined his wife. The siege lasted a few months until the French Duke and his troops, racked by disease, had to give up. The Duchy of Milan was safe. For now. Next time, we head back south, where things were really heating up and a historical battle was in the making, in which Charles would really have to fight to get out of an Italy that had now turned against him. Thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned for the sketch after the credits. Thanks in particular to my wonderful, wonderful Patreon supporters, starting from the second half of the Margherita Hack and Galileo Galilei level, and they are Il Valentino, Jacob L, Jeff M, Jeffrey W, John W, Jordan C, Joshua G, Julia G, Justin E, Kyle D, Laura H, a new arrival, welcome, welcome, Laura, Old John in Milwaukee, Orlando D, Kevin, Linus, Mark P, Marianne D, Marxist-Leninist Sicilian, Mella, and Michus Porchus. And of course, the tippy-top, Maria Montessori and Dante Alighieri level, Lisa K, Andrew M, Peter W, David L, David C, JW, Sen, David A, Karen D, Peter F, Helenka, Kaiser Boss, Bridget, Dallas, and Joseph. Remember, if you are so inclined, you can get in touch. hello@ahistoryofitaly.com or go over to the URL where you too can become a Patreon supporter and get access to ad-free episodes and extra content, or have a look at stuff like our timeline, which I'm updating at the moment. Very useful. From 476 up to 1500 now. Thanks again very much for listening. Remember to click on the Explore Worldwide link in the show notes. And until next time, arrivederci.
Oh my! Oh my goodness!
What's the matter now, Ludovico?
Beatrice! Oh my! The people are unhappy about the taxes. There's unlawful nobles, and that horrible Duke of Orleans is menacing my poor little duchy, and I just got it, and I'm so tired and stressed, and I don't like it. Ow! What was that for?
Get it together, man, and stop blubbing.
You're mean.
Oh, put a sock in it. Have you sent out the armies?
Yes, they're just sitting there doing nothing much, and we don't have much money left.
Okay, I'll start by writing to Papa.
Okay. What should I do?
Go and sit and look pretty and change your diapers or something.
Oh, gosh, you are mean.
Dear Papa, things are very serious here. Duke of Orleans is threatening us. Ludovico is being a giant wimp. Please send troops and money. P.S. Still waiting for the pony you promised for my wedding. Kisses to Mama, Bear.
My dear Fuzzy Bunny Lumpkin, so sorry to hear about the situation, but I couldn't possibly help out. Far too busy here, overseeing the new garden and riding round and round on my horse. Yes, that's it. Also keeping an eye on your brother, who keeps wanting to shoot at things with his cannons. Love, Daddy.
Dear Papa, this is unacceptable. I would almost think you win the league with the French. Plus, if you hesitate and don't know what to write, you should avoid actually writing and I beseech you one last time, send help. Otherwise, I will be very angry and not talk to you and hold my breath until I faint. Love, Bear.
My little pumpkin pie. How could you say I'm in league with the French? That's very hurtful.
What? No, not now, Gaston. No, I'm writing to my daughter. What? Oh, yes. The secret plans for the defense of Milan are there on the desk. Just take them now. Shush!
Anyway, I forgive you in your difficult time for accusing me, as I can't spare any soldiers, since we're all having an important tournament this afternoon to see who can wee the furthest and spell their name while burping. I'm sending you some cash along with your wedding pony. How's that? Love and kisses, Papa.
I have the definitive answer from my father.
What does he say?
He's not sending any troops, just cash. And he's calling me Pumpkin.
Pumpkin? What on earth is that?
Must be one of those imaginary fruits he comes up with, claiming that they will come from some new continent one day.
Oh, well, what do we do now?
Now, my dear, we take matter into our own hands. We leave to the front.
The front? Ah, well, yes. It's just that I've been feeling rather poorly. I think I'm coming down with something. Achoo.
Oh, just forget it. I'll go. But if, when I come back, there's any trace of any girls or ermines around here, you'll wish you were seriously ill.